I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. I'm really pleased to have Alexandra Gill on now. She is the Globe and Mail's West Coast restaurant critic. I'm a fan of her work because the reviews are lively, cogent, fair, and thoughtful. Others have described her reviews as scathing, bitchy, and have left many a restaurateur to cringe. Everyone, though, seems to read her. We'll find out what it's like to have such a reputation, how she does her job, and is being a food critic in Vancouver as glamorous or gluttonous as some might see it as. We'll look at the restaurant scene in Vancouver as well, maybe reflect on some of the trends seen in our restaurants. She joined the paper in 1997 and moved here from Toronto to cover the art scene from 2001 to 2007. She was nominated for a National Newspaper Award in 2005. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Alexandra Gill. Good morning, Ms. Gill.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So, how do you view your job as a critic in the paper? Are you there to encourage, say, the restaurant business, or to cheerlead, say, or are you there to get those of us who dine out maybe once a month, once a week, to go to some of these places that you do review?
Well, I'm absolutely an advocate for the consumer. For the diner. Mm-hmm. I mean, no, I'm not there to promote the restaurants, and I'm not there to be friends with the owners or to boost the city's tourism, culinary tourism. My job is just like any other critic, be it a theater critic or a television critic. I'm there to assess the restaurants on their merits, to help guide diners as to where they should spend their dollars, their dining dollars, and which places they might want to avoid. And if they do go to a restaurant, to steer them towards the best bets on a menu.
And what is it that you look for when you're reviewing a restaurant? Are you looking for value? Are you looking for taste? Are you looking for a nice room, nice service?
Well, I mean, that depends. I mean, my reviews range from fine dining to casual, you know, from small holes in the wall to, generalist chain restaurants. So you have to judge each on its merits. I mean, I think that's one of the most important things that comes into this job. A lot of reviewers won't even bother going to a chain restaurant, say a Cactus Club or an Earl's. And that, to me, just smacks of elitism, or because a lot of my readers do dine at those restaurants, so I can't just ignore them. I have to look at the different ones and tell them which ones are worth their money.
And so how do you decide on what to review? Does a new restaurant, say, does that warrant a review automatically, or
not every restaurant? I mean, if it's a small 10 seat Lebanese lunch counter, I might include that in a review of various different lunch places, serve it in a survey. Is it worth 800 words? Probably not. Just because it's new doesn't mean it's, I'm going to cover it. If they're doing something fantastic, say like Meat and Bread in Guesttown, really interesting sandwich restaurant that's putting out a high quality product, getting lots of buzz, and is sort of on the cutting edge of a new trend, which saw an explosion of sort of lunch counters in Vancouver, then sure, I'd cover that one. So again, each one sort of on its merits.
Yeah, it's funny how you mentioned Meat and Bread, how we see porchetta at a lot of restaurants now.
Yeah, that's the thing about Vancouver. It's a small. I guess you see that in any city. One thing, one restaurant tries something, then everyone imitates it, puts their own spin on it. I mean, that's pretty common. You see that. It's the same as in fashion.
Yeah.
one designer puts out capris, and everyone else is doing capris that season.
So I guess another question that people have about your job and what you do is who pays for the meal?
Oh, the Globe and Mail pays for all my meals. I mean, I have a budget. It's not a huge budget. And lately, I've been arguing for a larger budget. It's not coming. So what I've done is, instead of, I think, to do a proper review, you have to go to each restaurant twice. Because consistency is one of the major elements that you're looking for in a restaurant. So what I've been doing in about, I guess, the last year is mixing my reviews with trend stories that don't necessarily cost a lot. I can do interviews over the phone or, you know, or just do different sorts of things. And so I've been doing less reviews, but going to each restaurant twice.
Yeah, I noticed.
So I'm stretching my budget.
Yeah, I noticed you did a piece a couple weeks ago about Vietnamese restaurants along Kingsway. I live at Fraser and King Edward, and
it's not far from.
And I've been to some of the places on the list. It just seemed to me when reading that say Kingsway wasn't a place where Globe readers would traditionally go. Is that something that you want to do as well as take the reader to different neighborhoods, say, or different cuisines? That
definitely, and you know, there was a huge response to that. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time. I was intimidated about going into some of those restaurants, and I'm sure there are tons of readers who are, but my readers love that, and they don't always go. Just because it's a Globe and Mail reader doesn't mean they want to go to and spend $200 every time they go for dinner. Everybody's looking for a bargain, and everybody's looking to try new cuisines and explore new places. And I was so proud of that piece, and because I spent a lot of time. It wasn't cheap. I went to, you know, dozens of different restaurants and picked sort of my top dozen.
Mm-hmm.
There were lots of places that I didn't recommend. And people just, I mean, that's what food does. It opens new doors. It's a new experience. It allows you to travel different places in your own city. And so that's definitely been a mandate of mine lately, is to, you know, get out of just the mainstream restaurant scene and explore new cuisines, new neighborhoods. It keeps the job interesting for me, too.
And how do we rate in terms of our restaurants in the city? I mean, are we as world-class as we'd like to think we are?
Well, we're small. Yeah. I think for the size of our population, we bat well above average because there's a really interesting food scene here. We've got great passion amongst reviewers, and not just reviewers, I mean chefs and farmers and fishers and foragers. We've got great product to work with, and we've got a really interested population. When I came to Vancouver in 2001, I came here as an arts correspondent, but my mandate was to do more than that. At the time, the bureau was pretty small, and everyone was a hardcore news reporter, and nobody wanted to write about food or fashion or travel or, you know, softer lifestyle stories. Mm-hmm. And so my editors in Toronto said to me, go out, write about what captures your attention, what you find really interesting, and it was the food scene here. Vancouverites, I think people in BC in general, spend more money dining out than any other region in Canada, and it's part of the culture here. People are fascinated by food, and they want to know what's happening. We've got kind of a very interesting camaraderie amongst chefs, which you don't find in other cities, and that's in a large part because of the Vancouver Magazine Awards. It creates excitement, it creates competition, and there's just a really interesting sense of community. Now I've lost train of my train of thought, but we do bat higher. We have a more interesting food culture for our size, but we don't have the same range or depth that you'd find in New York or Chicago. That's, I mean.
I went to two restaurants this weekend. I went to Black and Blue, and and the Shore Club, which I understand is closing in about a week or so. Are those considered they're above average in terms of price?
Yeah.
How are they regarded, I guess, in the city in terms of the reputation, say, or the attention that they're getting in the press?
Well, that's a really interesting one, because I dined at Black and Blue recently, and I'm going to be writing that review soon. And to me, it's not the best steak in the city.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite steak is at High's, because they still cook with charcoal.
Same here, difference. Yeah.
But a restaurant like that, it's big, it's flashy, it's fancy. It serves a niche. It's part of the Global Group, which includes Global, Italian Kitchen, Coast. And to me, they don't necessarily serve the best food, but they're vibrant, lively places. I was there at Black and Blue on Friday night, and I was walking out, and there was a big dentistry convention in town. And there are all these dentists wandering around, and a bunch of middle-aged men, a group of middle-aged men, were walking by. And looking in the restaurant, they could see people dancing around the bar, and they could hear the music. And it looked, you know, the chandeliers were flashing. It looked like a fun place to be. And they stopped and they stared, and someone at the door said, "Gentlemen, would you like to come in?" And they said, "You bet! This looks like the liveliest place in town." So they were packed. They know their customer, the owners of that restaurant, and they serve an audience. Is it the best place to go for a steak? Not in my mind, but a lot of people like that style of dining. And they want to go to some place that feels like it's in a big city.
Yeah, yeah.
When we don't have that many restaurants, you know,
yeah,
that feels so exciting, you know.
Yeah, a new restaurant that you've reviewed. That seems to be getting a lot of attention, not just here, but throughout the country, is Hawksworth. I had lunch there once. Is that, does it warrant the attention that it's getting? I mean, I read somewhere that it's the best reviewed restaurant in the country. Is that true?
Well, I think it came in the En Route magazine of, they do an annual survey, the best new restaurants, and it came in second.
Yeah.
Of course, it's, the attention is warranted because David Hawksworth is one of not just Vancouver's but Canada's best known chefs, and he, you know, did a tremendous job when he was chef at West. He's been out of commission for a while, waiting for the Rosewood Hotel to open. So there was, and they built a really big, splashy restaurant. There's no other room like that in downtown Vancouver with a big. Chandeliers, the crystal chandeliers, marble tables. I mean, that even if we're not a big city, every city of a certain size needs a restaurant like that, a fancy fine dining restaurant. There's room for that, and there was a real void in Vancouver. When I went in, I thought it wasn't living up to its potential. They put a lot of effort and money into that restaurant, but they didn't have a reservation system that worked. They had rude staff at the front door. They had, you know, I went to the bar and had to wait half an hour to get a drink. They have this set, a sommelier for every table, but the sommeliers and the servers weren't communicating well, and that distracts from the whole dining experience. So I didn't give it the best review. I thought the food was very good. I think David could do better. I think he was being conservative and holding back a bit. But I still thought the food was good. It wasn't overly priced, probably artificially underpriced, actually. But for a restaurant like that, that so much attention on it, it's the small little details. Service isn't a small little detail. It's a major detail. And if they're not getting that right, then they need to hear that, or else they're going to believe their own hype, and they're never going to improve.
Yeah. Now, I've mentioned three restaurants. I mean, they're multi-million-dollar rooms. In this economy, with the HST and all that, are restaurants in this part of the world, are they making money? Are they doing well economically?
In this part of the world or in that area of dining? Fine dining has never been a big money maker.
No, it hasn't. Okay.
No, I mean, when you look at the Michelin-starred restaurants around the world, they're vanity projects, and they, you know, for the most part, you're never going to make your fortune on a three-star Michelin restaurant. You make your money through alcohol and booze sales in any restaurant. But there's a shift away from fine dining, definitely, around the world. Everything's become a lot more casual. People are looking for less ostentation, more down-to-earth, a down-to-earth casual experience, better value.
In terms of service, I've noticed at a number of restaurants that they have people opening doors and the sort. I mean, is that a big deal, do you think?
Does it change my opinion of a restaurant if someone opens the door for me?
Yeah, that's been something. But it's funny because it's something that I've noticed.
Well, they do. Even in Walmart, they have greeters.
That's true, yeah.
I guess it's part of some people think that's important service. I know if I go into a restaurant and I'm not acknowledged for 15 minutes, if nobody even smiles at me or comes over to let me know that they'll be with me in a few minutes, that will detract from the experience. Nobody wants to be left waiting at the door. So maybe there's something to be said for it.
Yeah. But back to what you do when you're reviewing a restaurant, do you have to go in with an elaborate disguise, say, or I mean, do...
No, I don't wear wigs.
No.
I do change my hair a lot, color or style, wear different glasses. But no, I mean, I think the days of the anonymous restaurant critic are over, if they ever really existed. I mean, everybody knows who everybody is. Especially in the big cities, they make the restaurant owners. Make it their job to find pictures of the reviewers and let everyone on the staff know who they are to be alert. But in the day of Facebook and Google, and everybody has a digital footprint, or shall you say?
Mm.
When Sam Sifton was hired as the New York Times reviewer, I mean, his picture was, flashed around the cybersphere, within a matter of minutes. It's hard to remain anonymous, but you can always remain honest. And I don't wear disguises, but I don't announce that I'm going in. And when I'm there, if I'm given special attention, I'll discount it. Because I'll look around to see how everyone else is being served. And no matter how close I am, I can't help but be noticed because I was an arts critic, a regular reporter for years before I became a restaurant critic, so my mugshot was in the paper. My picture is out there. And I know some of these restaurant owners and chefs because for years before I started reviewing, I was writing features about food features, about food and trends and restaurants. So I just have to step back and say, how would I review this if I didn't know this person at all? And it can be hard because it's hard to say things that, to critique the people you know. Those are the hardest reviews to write. But I have to be honest. And sometimes it works the other way around. I'll know something about a restaurant owner. Say I have a friend who's... There was one instance. I had a friend who worked in a restaurant as a waiter, and he was treated horribly by the owners, really horribly. And I had to go and review another restaurant that they had opened. And it killed me to give them a good review because I knew they were nasty people, but the food was good. The service was good. I mean, you have to step back and not let your personal bias get in the way.
And speaking of digital footprints, when one looks you up, there's an incident from a couple of years ago where you'd given a review of a restaurant and it wasn't terribly favorable.
Yeah.
And you went back and were thrown out. Does that happen often?
That's the only time it's happened to me, but it's happened to many other critics in many other cities.
Yeah, and now...
And that's their, that's right. I, you know what? I just haven't gone back to any of their restaurants and reviewed them.
Yeah, do you think your review is validated, somehow validated? Because my understanding is that they had to revamp, and the revamp is now closing.
Well, I wouldn't say, is it validated? No, I don't look at it like that. I mean, there's a lot that goes into why a restaurant changes, the changing economy, as we've talked about. Expectations, but I still think that what they served me that day wasn't a great example of cooking, and I'll stand by that. And I probably didn't serve some of they did change things. I try not to get on my high horse and be childish about it. I think they did what they wanted to do, and I think one critic's opinion doesn't make or break a restaurant or change the whole philosophy to a menu.
Have blogs, have they changed sort of the traditional restaurant criticism that we see in newspapers?
I mean, there have been, everyone talks about the negative aspects of blogs, but there are some good things that come out of it. For me, it's, I've made friends with some of the better bloggers around town who have the time to go and try out every little restaurant on the Vietnamese restaurant on the Kingsway. And I'll go to them for advice and say, which one should I start with? What do you recommend? Because I know that they're passionate about that particular type of food, and they can, some of them can be just as discerning. So that's one angle. On the other side, there are a lot of review bloggers that go in without a whole lot of food knowledge. A lot of people who, a lot of restaurants that cater to bloggers just to get the word out, and will give, provide free meals, for better or for worse. So you have to take it all with all the online criticism with a grain of salt. I find it doesn't usually align with what I'm writing anyway.
Alexandra, this has been just a fascinating conversation. Thanks so much for this. I'm a fan of your work, and we'll keep reading you in the paper.
Thank you. Keep eating. Let me know if you come across anything great.
Will do. The Globe and Mail's Alexandra Gill on the line in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.